Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is July 15th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live, well, not live, but if you're listening to Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send the questions to questions, it's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of the website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Epistle of John, 1 John, chapter 4, read by Alexander Scoby.
Chapter 4. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Hereby know ye the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof ye have heard that it should come, and even now already is it in the world. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. They are of the world. Therefore speak they of the world, and the world heareth them. We are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not us. Hereby know we the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Beloved, let us love one another. For love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God. For God is love. In this was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world, that we might live through him. Herein is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us, and for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. No man hath seen God at any time. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. Hereby know we that we dwell in him and he in us, because he hath given us of his Spirit. And we have seen and do testify that the Father sent the Son to be the Savior of the world. Whosoever shall confess that Jesus is the Son of God, God dwelleth in him and he in God. And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love. And he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
We have a number of announcements, John, or questions, excuse me.
Okay.
First one. Hello, I have purchased the book, Meet Your Strawman and Whatever You Want to Know, We the People. It's an American-based book. I wanted to know, A, if there are any books in relation to Canada, as I am a Canadian citizen, and or if, B, there are certain parts of this book that apply to Canadian laws, /constitutions, and how?
Well, first of all, Meet Your Straw Man was not written by us, and we didn't put that out, although there is a reference to National Liberty Alliance in that handbook. So a lot of people have confused that. Anybody looked at that handbook to see who the author is on that? Because
Yes, John, it's authored by NLA, it says.
Really?
Yes. I had an argument with a fellow a while back that said we wrote it, so he wanted to get in contact with us because we wrote it.
Well, we're familiar with that type of context. We've looked at that context before, and you know, there's a lot of truths in that handbook. But again, we didn't put that handbook out. I know there's an individual who's printed a couple of things that we own or we authored and are selling it on Amazon. And I believe last week we heard is that individuals in jail for other things. So anyway, I don't know what to tell anyone on that. So no real answer on that. Whatever's going on in Canada is the same thing that's going on around the whole world. The New World Order is trying to make that move. They're very close to it. And if it wasn't for Trump, they would have succeeded at this by now already, as a matter of fact. All right, next question.
Okay, I just received a summons for a credit card debt account by a third party. I would like to know how to respond. Could you please review the steps I need to take? If not, is there a place where I can find this information? Thank you very much for your service to humanity.
A credit card debt by a third party, so I presume someone is trying to collect on behalf of some credit card, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what they're talking about. They don't say who that third party is, or do you understand who they're focusing on?
I gave you everything I got.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that, then. There's not enough information. You know, there is a credit cards in themselves, as far as the reporting of credit of your credit card on these different places that report on your credit, you can actually have that removed because unless there is some kind of a court decision on you for that, you know, they're posting something that's affecting you and it's a hearsay situation, you can't have it removed. I have never went through the process of that. I know Gerard had studied that, and let's see, Gerard's here tonight, so he can talk a little bit about that. But anyway, don't know. Next question.
Okay. I would like to know the effects of adversarial proceedings in a bankruptcy. I need assistance with one in bankruptcy to challenge the validity of a mortgage debt, which should include a discovery, demand for proof of claim, need template, and will be willing to pay for consultation.
Well, we don't do that per se. Again, with that situation, I'm not sure exactly. Does it sound like they're going through a bankruptcy or something and they're having a problem with the mortgage being there or something? I mean, I'm not sure I understand that one either.
Doesn't say bankruptcy of what in the question.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. You know, I don't have enough information to really respond to that one either. Next.
That's the end of them, John. You're done.
All right.
Yeah, you're done.
Okay. All right. Anyway, we would like to remind everyone of the importance of joining the campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You know, you can click on our campaign for constitutional sheriffs tab. Let's see, if you come to tab under sheriff, you come to join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs, you can get some information of that. It's extremely important that we start educating our sheriffs in a big way. I am working, we spoke about this last week, I am working on papers concerning the sheriff. And I'm really surprised on how many places, how many states, and how many counties have either gotten rid of their sheriff, turned their sheriff into an appointed position, or even have is one state, maybe more than that, a couple of counties that are really requiring sheriffs to do the work of police, civil law work, code enforcement. I thought that there were a few states were problematic, but there's actually a total of 30 of them. 30 states have serious problems with their sheriffs. They have taken the power away from their sheriffs. And we are working on a paper on that. I was hoping to share that tonight. I've been working diligently for quite a few days now. And even today, I must put 10 hours into trying to get this paper completed. I'm almost there. If I had another maybe 3-4 hours, I probably could finish it, and then maybe we could be sharing it tonight. So we'll probably share that next week. And we have lots of papers to share. Of course, that is one of them. We also spoke last week about restoring our courts of record, which would be the next paper that we would write, First Amendment redress of grievances, concerning the federal rules of civil procedure that claim to have abrogated the common law. And we want to restore our courts of record. There are no courts of justice that we can enter into. At least I haven't found one. If anybody finds one, please let me know. I don't even know that they exist. And as far as I'm concerned, every judge, because of that, needs to be dismissed. We also are looking to reinstate, to restore the concealed 13th Amendment, after which we can deal with the Bar Association. Another paper we'll be working on, we spoke about last week, concerning, again, redress of grievances, concerning the balance of power that was destroyed by the 17th Amendment. And then, of course, our final paper, which, again, most of this is written also already, and it really is going up against the judiciary from a standpoint, really, of relieving them by the will of the people. Now, that paper will be the last paper we'll file, and in this case, at that point, when devolution comes to a hardcore play, when that happens, that's when we'll file that paper. I do hope to get these other papers filed in before. I don't know whether it's possible. I do, because they are constitutional issues, I think they're very powerful. They're probably going to be dismissed on the lower courts, and we'll move it up the appellate process. And I do believe it is a potential paper that might be heard by the United States Supreme Court. As long as the doorkeeper doesn't prevent us from getting there, that's been a problem we've had with one of our papers going up against the judiciary, the federal judiciary. But we're going to be working on that. In any event, there are papers that bear a lot of weight and will be filed, will be copied with JAG and numerous military individuals. And we'll see where we go with it. I do believe if we get it up to the Supreme Court, I think they're going to rule correctly on all of these cases because they are the law of the land. So anyway, we do need everyone involved. We do have someone that is putting up the money to move this sheriff's case. So that's something we're going forward with. We do need money to file these cases. I mean, we write them for free, of course. You know, no one's getting paid to write these. But as far as filing them, we have numerous filings to do and filing into federal court. And that costs money. Also, years ago, we did have, and I still have all the equipment for this, and an additional computer to run it. We had 10 fax machines running 24/7, and we were sending messages out to different individuals, individuals in Congress, sending out to sheriffs, and a lot of information. And I'd like to get that back up and going. I really do think now is the time to start to communicate with our sheriffs, especially after we file this paper. But again, to get that moving, to get it going, it requires money. So, anybody that could help us out with that, we'd appreciate it. And especially if someone has some deep pockets and maybe can support one of our papers or one of the things we're doing, maybe someone else could do the same. But again, you know, everybody can give some money here to help pay for these things. But I'm going to write these papers regardless. Whether we're able to file them or not is really up to the people, whether they want to get this filed or not. We can only do so much. And, you know, we need money to do anything. But we did have a good meeting with Colonel McGregor and his thing that he's putting together, Our Country, Our Choice. We'll be sharing a lot of information on that. I think it's a powerful program that they put together, and we'll see how it goes. And it may be the very thing that may give us here at National Liberty Alliance the critical mass we're looking for. We need critical mass. You know, we need about 300,000 people across America to literally take everything back. Of course, we need the military to really give it back to us, because other than that, it would take a real revolution in the streets, and nobody's interested in getting into that kind of a situation. But, you know, devolution's playing out, and we've got a lot of information on that. We've done some programs on that. There's a lot of different people that are responding or giving information. We have SGNON that's been talking and giving us a lot of information on where we are with that kind of a situation, where we stand, and the timing. And we do believe that the hammer's about ready to drop any time now. But we've got another just under 4 months before the election, and something has got to break somewhere by that time. After all, what we saw took place over the weekend, that really tells a lot. We do need money. So anybody that can afford to give some extra dollars, we'd appreciate it. Let's see what else I might have. I'm not going to repeat a lot of the stuff. The last few Monday nights, we've been putting out a lot of information. So anybody that's missed those last few, you might want to go out and take a look at that. You'll find under today's issues, NLA Monday Open Forum videos. We do, of course, have the MP3s that you can find under the Monday Call page right here. But last week, again, was a really good meeting, really informative, a lot of good information and things taking place. But again, if people have been missing these last meetings, you can go check them out. Okay, one more thing, I'm just going to repeat it again. We need to educate our sheriffs. So please join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Again, under the sheriff's tab, right there, join our campaign. All right, we do have the queue open. Let me see if anybody's in the queue here. Yeah, we do have some people in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a star 601 if you're on a phone.
We have Ken or Kent that would like to make an announcement about his upcoming barbecue on Long Island again tonight, if you can. All right. He's in the queue.
Okay, so I'll get him first. I see him there. All right, anybody else wants to get into the queue? Again, star 601 if you're on a phone, and if you're coming in with an app or a browser, there should be a button there to push to enter into the queue. So we're going to go directly into the queue today. Next week, we're going to share probably the sheriff's paper, probably spend 40 minutes or so on that, looking at the details, and then hopefully discuss that, get some questions, get some thoughts, and people should see the power. And by the way, the official launch of Our Country, Our Choice is planned and focused for the second week or the middle of August. I believe they said the second week of August. So looking forward to that, and hopefully that's going to give us our critical mass. Okay, let's take Ken first. Ken, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Thank you. This Saturday, July 20th, at Smithtown, New York, Long Island, there'll be a barbecue held by Americans for Legal Reform. For further information on it, you can go to their website, and that's Americans, plural with an S on it, 4, that's the number 4, legalreform.org. smithtownbarbecue.com. The barbecue will be at 14 Ray Lane in Smithtown, Long Island, New York. It will start at 12 noon, and it will go to probably 9 or 10 o'clock at night. Based on prior attendance, there should be several hundred people there that come and go throughout the entire day. And there will be an opportunity to network this year. Paul Lanzara, who is one of the founders of the group back in the 1980s, it's about 40 years old, has offered to allow people to network at this meeting, give out their literature, sell their books or clothing that has to do with hats, shirts, etc., that have to do with this movement of restoring the constitutional republic, good governments, consent by the people for good government. And that will take place on the front lawn of this. We're also looking to probably, if people come or when people come from other groups and want to say something, they will have an opportunity most likely to be videotaped for 5 or 10 minutes, and that will later be put up on the ALR, Americans for Legal Reform, website and on Facebook. The rain date for this event, if it rains this coming Saturday, will be Sunday the next day, July 21st, same time, same location, etc. There's food there, there's a swimming pool there, etc. And we encourage you to come and to network. I think Carl's been very kind in opening up to other groups, and also other groups that come will be able to get on their website. If you have a conference call, you have a group, etc., that's doing this kind of work and is like-minded, you'll be able to get onto Carl's website or the Americans for Legal Reform website in the networking section. I also want to tell you, John, Carl told me that he's printed up 200 of those two-sided flyers that we spoke about on the phone. So that pretty much covers it, I think, unless anybody has any questions. Thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Okay. Thank you, Ken. And if anybody that's in the queue or wants to get into the queue has any questions concerning that for Ken, just bring it up. Ken, in case anybody asks the question, I'm going to leave you unmuted. So if you can mute yourself on your end, so if anybody has a question, you can unmute yourself and speak to these people, okay?
I'll do that. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, let's take our first caller here. It looks like it is Jermaine. I think that's the name, North Carolina.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you. Go right ahead. You got the mic.
Hey, I have a question. My son had some incident where he was driving for a oil refinery, and because of an incident, he's not able to get an explosive certification. He was never like really convicted for this, rather he took a plea for this incident. Is there a way to revert that back so he can apply for his explosive?
I'm having a hard time. I'm having a hard time hearing you, actually understand you. I can hear you loud enough, but I'm not understanding. There seems to be some kind of break or something. But what happened again? Try it again. Maybe you can give me whatever, the short version or whatever. Is some kind of an incident, you said?
Yes, he was stopped by the police and he was arrested.
Yes, okay, so he was stopped by the police and arrested for a crime or a traffic violation or what?
Like a traffic violation.
So they arrested him on a traffic violation. What kind of traffic violation?
He was transporting some people. He gave a ride, and it happened that these people had no papers, and then he was charged for trafficking.
Really? Wow. I don't know what to tell you on that. This was a regular police department? What city? What town? Where was this? What was it? The regular town police or city police or something?
I think it was a sheriff.
Okay, so the sheriff, what county?
In Texas, I'm not sure if I've been in the county.
Right. You know, Texas is one of the states that that really is strong on their sheriffs, it seems. So, so I guess he must live close to the border.
Yes, he works there, and he works at a refinery, and because of that, he's no longer able to work because he needs an explosive certification from ATF, I think it's what they call.
And he needs what kind of a what from ATF?
In order to work in that field, you need an explosive certification.
An explosive? I'm not getting that word.
Explosive to work with explosives. You know when
they work with wells?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you on that situation. I there's not enough information. What are the charges? Just trafficking? That's it?
Trafficking, yes, and because of that, he went to court. He ended up pleading guilty, and they told him that within a year or so that he can have that wiped off. That charge wasn't even going to show us trafficking.
Yeah, I have no comment on that. I really don't know. And, people need to know the law. People need to know due process and how to go through the process, going through the courts and defend themselves and take care of their legal business. And unfortunately, people don't know how to do that. And that's something we should have been taught in school. You know, I think it's a two-year education to become a lawyer. I understand it cost, I think I heard $220,000, I think it was. It would have cost basically for going through law school. But I think it's a two-year course to go through that process. Common law, of course, we have a common law course, Court Access in the Common Law. It's a 90-hour course. We only charge $125 for that. And, of course, that goes into National Liberty Alliance, what we're working and doing, but quite a few people have taken that course. And it teaches people due process, how the system works. And you have to understand the system, and you have to have a proper mindset to go into the courts. That takes time to get, but going through the course is important. We need to get this course, or a course similar to this, into the schools for our children so that, when they grow up and become adults and they need to give back, and they need also to be able to defend themselves, and they need to know, we have a right to get into the courts, the right of going through a judicial process. But we can't do that on our own if we don't know how to do it, and we end up having to pay some bar attorney who's not interested really in winning your case. He's just interested in your pocketbook. And that's a major problem. To go into the federal courts, I don't think you'll find a lawyer to go into a federal court to do anything without at least a $30,000 deposit. And believe me, they'll hit you for every dime of that $30,000 as time goes on, and it'll cost more. The papers that we have done and put into the courts, if a bar attorney was to have done that, it would have cost millions of dollars, literally. And even the papers we're preparing to file now probably cost in the many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, again, if you pay an attorney to do it. And they could never defend you as good as you could defend yourself. They say it's not a good thing to try to defend yourself. You need to get a lawyer. It's much better. That may be true if you're guilty of a crime. Maybe it is true for that. But as far as going into the courts, nobody knows your case better than you. You'll have that desire much more to win than any bar attorney would. But anyway, I can't really answer that question. There's not enough information to begin with, and I wouldn't even know where to begin on that one. That's a pretty tough one. So, but do consider taking the course, maybe. Not that you, well, it sounds like it's something that's not going to be that bad if he's going to just has to go through a year or something in the sense that to be able to get back to work in the field. In other words, I presume he works in a field where he deals with explosives, right?
Yes, he does.
So this is the problem. He's losing his license or for a period of time, and he can't work on that or something like that, I guess, is what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct. He's actually been fired because he's not able to retain that, that license.
Well, you know, if it's trafficking and a sheriff stopped him, that has to go into, the federal courts. So is that where he's going through, the federal courts?
No, just the district county court.
I don't understand that one. This is a federal situation. Trafficking would be federal. That's their jurisdiction. He could challenge jurisdiction.
Even now that he pleads guilty already, just to, they stir you off.
Yeah, again, that makes it a little more complicated. But they try to make laws that if this happens or that happens, you can't do this and you can't do that. But if you don't understand or know what's going on, and you discover fraud, you discover a problem, you discover they don't have jurisdiction, well, they don't have jurisdiction. Everything is null and void. But that's a court battle, though. You have to have an ability to be able to make that battle. So you'd have to really study due process, which, again, anybody interested in that, you can go into Education Starts Here and come down to Court Access in the Common Law. And if you click on that particular tab there, plenty of information of the course, what it's about, gives a little introduction. And we also give the first 3 hours of the course for free right here. You can go through the first 3 hours, and that'll give you sort of a flavor of how our course is put together and what we're doing. But it does cover a lot. The table of contents really tells it all, what we cover, an introduction, the essentials, and then we have the pleadings and causes of actions, different defenses, motions, memorandums of law, the rules, both the federal rules of civil procedure we cover, and also the rules of common law, which is really what we want to apply. But you do have to understand what they are doing and what they're putting up to hold you to their rules. And so you need to kind of know some of the rules that they're going to hold you to so that you can defend against those rules because they're unlawful. So we have a lot of information here and on this course. So if you're interested, you could take that course or anybody else that's interested.
Okay, yeah. I started watching that first.
Okay, is that it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're done?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll take our next question. Kent is already, we picked up Ken, so we'll continue on to the next person. Can someone check to make sure Ken is still unmuted so that if he needs to talk, that he can talk? Okay, let's take, let's see who's next. Ken doesn't seem to go. I keep kicking. Two people were kicked out accidentally. Maybe you might want to get back in. I guess I got to do.
Hello?
Brett, you got the right ahead.
Yep, you can hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. My question is, when looking for work or a job, would it make sense to apply for a different tax identification number? To use?
When you're talking about starting a business or just looking for a job?
Well, like a job, would it make sense to use a...
If you come in as a subcontractor to work for someone, then you could do something like that. But coming in your own person to go to work, I mean, they do require you to give them your social security number. I don't think there's anything else. But again, if you work out a deal where you're going to come in as a subcontractor, then you could do a DBA, which is filing a paper in a county, or you can you know, create a corporation. And under those two situations, you'll go out and get a federal number, and then use that for, you know, whatever business you have to do. But you can open a bank account that way with that number.
Okay. Is there a certain step or a certain someone to speak to go that route, or is this more of a do-it-yourself?
So you want to be a subcontractor to some place you want? If you're going to get employed, you can't do that. Okay, but if you work out a deal where you're going to become a subcontractor, and a subcontractor does not get paid by the hour, sometimes, of course, you do T&M, but you don't get paid by the hour. You work out a contract agreement, and whatever that might be, and then at that point, and the purpose of getting that that number at this point really is to being able to open up a bank account in the business name, and that's the purpose.
Okay.
But you don't share that number with anyone, by the way. Basically, you know, you have a business name, and you bill them to the business name.
Okay. You say you don't share that number with anyone as far as who you work at.
Basically, no. You use it only for opening up an account. You're not going to be able to open up an account without a federal ID number or a Social Security number. No bank will open up an account without that.
Okay. When opening that account, would it be okay to have a direct deposit to that from if you are working as an employee?
Well, again, you wouldn't be an employee. You'd be a contractor.
Okay, and you're just getting paid for the job that's being completed versus hourly, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Whatever contract agreement you make with the individuals you're working for, as a contractor.
Okay. Have you heard? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
As a contractor, not as an employee.
Okay. Have you ever heard of something like that where someone is, where a place is hiring for employees, but someone comes on and works as a contractor? You heard of something like that?
You can convince them that they can make better off by coming through, the less risk and so on and so forth by going through as a subcontractor. You know, again, you know, I've been in business most of my life, and I'm retired now, but nevertheless, as a contractor, you know, you go out and you advertise. I used to advertise in the phone book many years back when the phone book was valid. I mean, I don't think they have a Yellow Pages anymore, and I haven't seen them anyway. I mean, there's not even any phone booths anymore. But, you know, you have to advertise and get out to do business. And working directly for one company, if you, you know, there could be, got to be careful with that because, you know, a contractor works for many different individuals or companies or whatever. You know, I started off as a subcontractor. I worked for other contractors as a subcontractor, worked for developers and all kinds of different individuals.
Okay. Would you happen to have any sources to direct me to learn more about that?
Well, no, it's really all about learning your field, whatever your field of business is, and getting out there and advertising, finding the best way that you would find the market that you want to advertise to. Of course, you'd want to, you can incorporate, and I know here in New York, I do it through Manhattan, and it's pretty cheap. I mean, it could cost you $1,500 or more to create a corporation. You could do it yourself for $300-$400. I know here in New York you can. I don't know where any place else that where they may do that. But or you can go down to the county and just file for a DBA. That's the cheapest and quickest way. And it's an affidavit form that you fill out, choosing a company name, and doing a search on that, make sure that nobody is using that name, particularly within your state, as far as going through you know, your local county, and go out and find work and make contracts, and that's it. Whatever it is that you're doing, I don't know. Again, I was a construction guy, so I was building homes and things of that nature.
Okay. I've seen it where people have filed a corporation or a limited liability company using their name. Now, is that, do you think that's a good thing to do or not a smart thing to do?
I'm sorry, I missed that. Said it again? You saw people what?
Seen it where people have formed a corporation or LLC using their name, and I was just wondering if that was...
I would never do that. That's
you said you would never do
it? I would never do anything like that. Never. No. I mean,
okay.
You wouldn't want to use your own name, you know, and form a corporation under that name. Although people have, I mean, you know, but I wouldn't do that. It's really risky because it's really a problem dealing with the IRS with all this, but they're not going to be here next year, so well, maybe it doesn't mean anything at that point.
Okay.
Right?
Thank you.
All right. Okay, let's take our next caller. By the way, we only have a few people in the queue, so if anybody has a question or a comment, or a correction they can offer us, you know, we're open for that. Well, before we go any further, I see Gerard's here. Hey, Gerard, do you want to give us a little information on credit cards, dealing with credit cards? I know you've got some experience with that, and we had looked into some. I remember you shared a lot of that stuff with me. I think I saw that recently in my computer somewhere, that information. You're muted if you're talking. That maybe he's not in his computer. We'll take our next caller. Okay, Marvin, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Marvin.
Yes, I was the gentleman that called in concerning the bankruptcy. He wrote the email concerning the bankruptcy. I wanted to give clarification. Maybe I can give some assistance with that. It was concerning the adversarial proceeding. I was hoping someone can assist me with that, if possible.
Well, what do you mean by an adversarial proceeding? That someone comes in that's trying to challenge your bankruptcy because they're maybe a creditor that you owe money to or something?
Yes, I'm trying to challenge the mortgage. I want them to come in and prove the validity of the loan. I have a right to ask questions.
So you went to file bankruptcy, and then that became a problem at that point because they came in to argue and debate the fact that you owe them money, correct?
Yes.
Well, look, it's going to be real difficult in any court. Bankruptcy court may be even more difficult to make that argument on the behalf of what you're trying to do, but it can be made.
Yeah.
And there is no real contract. And now, is this a... a defaulted mortgage?
Yes, it is.
And you no longer have the home, or you do, or what?
I'm still in the home.
Okay.
Yes.
So they've been trying to, were they trying to do a non-judicial foreclosure on you of some kind?
No, it's a judicial foreclosure. They're trying to sell the property at this point.
There's no such thing as a judicial foreclosure because it's a non-judicial foreclosure. If they could do a regular, a lawful foreclosure, then they would do what you just said, a judicial foreclosure. But I've never seen it done. Even states where they don't have the provisions for non-judicial foreclosures, they do it anyway and the courts accept it. Not that they ever make a ruling. The whole thing is just a facade and you're going through the court system. Meanwhile, they're working in the background, taking control of your property and eventually will have you dispossessed by the sheriff.
Yeah.
Who's doing a... You know, who thinks at this point it's an awful situation.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, I'm in New York here, and New York is a judicial state, so we went through the whole court process.
New York does a non-judicial foreclosure. It's a facade. They open up a court. They usually do it through a town court because, or even a city court or a village court. I don't know if they do a village. And I guess they could do county courts too, but usually it's in the town that it's in. What town are you talking about?
Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, okay, the city.
Yeah.
And so you're in the city court?
Yes. The Supreme Court. They call it the Supreme Court of Kings County.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. Yeah, that's supposed to be a court of record, so they're supposed to proceed according to the common law. Of course, they're not.
Yeah.
There's lots of battles to be made, but you have to really understand how to make those battles, number one. And that doesn't mean you're going to win either, because they don't care about the law. They just do what they do.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, you're in the courts because they're allowing the courts to be used to make it look like that. The longer you fight in those courts, then the longer it takes for them to really go through the process. And I know of people that have gone to the courts every time they have a court hearing or something. They go and they make the argument and they reject what they're saying and they, you know, counter it and go through all these things. I know people who've gone through 5 years and still haven't been kicked out of their home yet.
But I'm in my 12th year.
Yeah, well, there you go. I don't know that you got much more time.
Is it for mortgage or taxes?
This is mortgage.
Yeah, non-judicial mortgage.
Yeah, you say it's non-judicial, but I've been fighting with these people in the court.
Because they're allowing you to do it. Look, if you go to federal court, if the IRS takes you into federal court, you're going to go to a federal court, you're going to go to the courthouse, and there's a special room that they rent for the purpose, and they also rent the judge. And everything looks like it's a court of law.
Yeah, it does.
But it's not. And so they're complicit. The federal courts are complicit. Same thing with these other courts. They're complicit. Usually in the towns, they're just stupid. They're morons. They just don't even understand that they're being abused and used. I mean, and in the city, you're down in the city court, and New York City courts are all courts of record. So that is supposed to be a common law court. It's supposed to be a court of law. Somebody's got a ring in here, though.
Yeah, someone's got a phone call.
Gerard, is that you with an open mic? All right, anyway, it's an uphill battle.
Okay.
And if they get it from you, you can write an affidavit and be attached to our filings, our last filings, which we're going to be looking for restitution. Especially for people who have been unlawfully incarcerated and people that have been lost their homes through either tax or mortgage non-judicial foreclosures. And again, it's a non-judicial foreclosure. Trust me, that's what it is.
Okay. Yeah, I believe you because it's like you can't say anything in there and they'll go for it. It's just dismiss everything and let them foreclose. You can foreclose, no matter what you say or do or evidence or whatever.
Yeah, well, again, you can. The longer you fight it and the more you fight it, the longer you'll be able to stay in the home. A lot of people will just leave their homes because they're told to leave their homes, so they leave them. And it's sort of abandoned at that point. They have a whole different process they can move on and make a claim on. And they go through it a lot quicker so they can. They could probably take control of the home within less than 2 years or 2 years, probably. Again,
right.
If you fight it, they could go on for many years.
Yeah, that's
and again, because it's hard for them to make for the judge to make a decision because he doesn't want to, because it's a non-judicial foreclosure.
Oh, I see. But they present it as if it's a judicial process. This is what's confusing me.
Look at Federal Reserve presents themselves as a reserve for the federal government for money. I mean, if it's they got something there, they have nothing. They don't federal nor do they have any reserve. The federal courts, look at every court. I am not aware of any court anywhere that's a lawful court in the United States. Not to say that there aren't any, because there may be.
Right.
I haven't come in any contact with anything that is lawful and operates lawfully.
Oh, see.
Operate unlawfully, every single one of them.
Uh-huh. So that's what we're fighting against right now. That's what we're all about here in this, this podcast or whatever, trying to deal with that issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, just keep doing what you're doing. You get as long as you can. When you finally lose the house, and if you don't lose it before the end of the year, you know, everything's going to change next year.
Okay.
So, if you do lose it, you know, you can get restored. The restitution is owed to you.
Okay. Okay. All right, then. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
All right.
Okay, we've got a couple of people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get in, now's the time.
Okay.
We'll take care. Let's see, we'll go to the next caller. We'll take, looks like Shella. Not sure what that is. Sheila. That's what it is, Sheila. What state are you in, Sheila? Sheila, you got the mic. The mic's open. Oh, no, it isn't. Hold on. Let me try again. Now it's open. You got the mic.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. What state are you in?
I'm in Alabama.
Okay. Go right ahead.
I was sued about a little over 6 months ago for default on a credit card, and I fought that through the trial court. The judge had I made a motion to dismiss. The judge had a hearing and ruled in favor of the plaintiff, even though I had demanded a jury. I denied each and every material allegation and demanded strict proof thereof and pled the affirmative defenses, including lack of personal and subject matter jurisdiction and failure to state a claim. Went through a process of a couple of motions, the motion to dismiss, and he ruled in their favor, although they presented zero evidence to substantiate their case. They did present a handful of old billing statements, but billing statements are not evidence that proves the existence of a legally enforceable contract. So then I made a motion to set aside the judgment and vacate it and set it aside and enter an order as a matter of law in favor of myself, which the judge denied 16 minutes after it was filed with the court. And I'm submitting substantial amount of legal precedent to support my position, and including the fact that I am not the real party in interest. I am not one in the same with the all capital letters name.
They're not going to go for that argument, and that'll only make them buckle down more and go after you for whatever they can. You know, my position on something like that is to take it into federal court for cause, and if the cause is denial of due process, but you need to understand how to do that, and you have to understand that you can only make the constitutional argument in the federal court, and if you win that constitutional argument, then your wherefore clause should be for them to cease and desist. So, Gerard, are you? Did you want to talk on this a little bit? Because you've been involved more with the credit cards. I saw your mic was off for one by a second. Are you here, Gerard?
Can I give you a little more background?
Yeah, can you hang on a second, because my dog is whining. I got to let her out.
Okay.
Anybody can pick up the mic for right now? Gerard, you there? Eric, can you pick up the mic for a while? I don't know if you can answer any of these questions, but I'll be back in.
I'm here.
I didn't hear the question because I was out. I just signed back in.
Yeah, she was talking about credit cards and stuff. Maybe you can just give a brief summary, Sheila.
Okay, I was sued for default on a credit card, and I denied each and every material allegation and demanded strict proof thereof, and asserted affirmative defenses, including lack of personal and subject matter jurisdiction and failure to state a claim on which relief can be granted. I filed a motion to dismiss subsequent, and the judge held a hearing. I demanded a jury trial. The judge held a hearing and ruled in the plaintiff's favor in spite of my demand for a jury trial. So then I filed a subsequent motion to vacate his judgment and set it aside and enter a judgment as a matter of law in my favor, which he denied 16 minutes after I filed it. And then I appealed to the Alabama Court of Civil Appeals and did all the legal precedent and everything that was in my favor. The plaintiffs were represented by a big attorney's office in Birmingham, Alabama. They filed no affidavit, counter affidavits. They filed no responses to my motions, and they filed no responses to my legal brief on the Court of Appeals. However, they filed another motion to the trial court judge. We never had a trial. He did it through a hearing. In fact, it was just a docket call that day, but he set my case to be heard on the motion to dismiss during docket call. And so they filed a motion, even though it was up on appeal and their legal brief was due, they filed a motion with the trial court to dismiss the case, which the judge granted. Their motion to dismiss, he granted. I responded to that action saying the judge does not have jurisdiction. This case is up on appeal. So then the Alabama Civil Court of Appeals filed an order remanding the case to the trial court level, and they said that they deemed the plaintiff's motion to dismiss the case as a motion to remand it back to the trial court. Trial court never had jurisdiction. And how can the Alabama Civil Appeals Court deem a motion to dismiss as a motion to remand? So anyway, it was remanded to the trial court level and he did dismiss it. So now the judgment against me went away, but I'm really irritated that they're sweeping the case under the rug. They're just trying to do away with it.
They dismissed the credit card company's case against you?
Yes.
Well, then you won.
I won. It's a little victory, but it really irritates me that they did it by remanding the case to the trial court and who had no jurisdiction.
You're not going to get anywhere with it, and it's not worth that battle. I mean, what are you looking to get in that battle?
But what excuse did they use to dismiss it?
That they had to look further into the question of whether there was any personal jurisdiction.
So they never produced a paper with your signature and everything else. They knew they were wrong, but
yes,
they threw a couple of extra steps in there to muddy the waters.
Yes.
In other words, so they could cover up their crimes.
Yes, yes.
They figured... And the judge said, we better let her go because we got caught. And so
yes. And then the appellate court, in order to further sweep it under the rug, the appellate court deemed it a motion to remand to the trial court, and he ruled on it. And then I just got a letter a few days ago from the appellate court saying the plaintiff's attorney filed another motion to dismiss the appeal. So they want to erase the appeal completely off the record.
Yeah, but it's already been ruled on.
It's been ruled on, but the trial court judge had no jurisdiction because it was up on appeal. And now, legally, I won a small victory, but the appellate court now wants to, and has, they sent an order dated July the 8th that they are dismissing the appeal. So they're further sweeping it under the court, under the rug, just to...
They don't have any more lock on you, though, right? I mean, they're not pursuing you anymore.
They're not pursuing me.
But what is your purpose of going after? Because you're angry, or because it's not worth it, if that's what it is? I mean, if you think you're going to get them to confess or hold them down to something, I don't think that's going to happen either. I'm kind of surprised you won that on that.
Dismiss it with prejudice or without prejudice?
Originally, that trial judge dismissed it without prejudice, But then he did back down when I objected to him taking jurisdiction because the case was on appeal. He backed down and he reversed himself. But then the appellate court remanded it to him, and he dismissed it with prejudice. I asked for my expenses to be reimbursed, and they did not do that, and that's one issue. But the other thing, it would have created a legal precedent that other people could have used in helping to defend their case. Basically, it stood for the proposition is they can't sue the individual in a credit card or a mortgage case because it's the straw man that's on the contract. And so
you didn't really win under that kind of a term. And, you know, again, I don't understand why you'd be pursuing it. It's not setting the precedence because it's a trial court. Okay. And you won through because they didn't have jurisdiction. At least that's what they allowed that win to be. You know, trial courts are not precedents. It's called case law. That's what they call their common law. The word that's used for that is comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, where judges, they get all these bad decisions that these judges make, and then lawyers will use those bad decisions in order to leverage their case and say, hey, look, here's a case that's similar to this, same kind of situation, and the judge ruled this way, and made this determination, and they got another case. They're calling that common law, and that's not common law. That's comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. But again, winning it for the purpose of being used as precedence would not be a common law, you know, leverage or anything.
Would it not be a case that other people could rely on if the Alabama Civil Appeals had done what they should have done, which would be rule in my favor?
No, the only decisions that are supposed to have any authority, and a lot of them are bad, is the decisions from the highest court in the state, which would be, I guess, the Supreme Court. You know, the U.S. Supreme Court, for instance, they make a decision that is used as law. Precedence, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And American jurisprudence, for instance, is made up of pretty much Supreme Court rulings, but not from trial courts. And again, the appellate courts are not considered in that either, to my knowledge. But you want to get the higher. But again, look, a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing, so the whole thing is just. The only thing is principles that really are held up by the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court rules on a case, and it's the principles inside that case that you can use, okay, which, you know, principles will rest on common law. In their case, they may rest it on some civil law, but it's supposed to be rested on common law.
Okay, so you don't think there would be any benefit in trying to do a writ of mandamus to the Alabama Supreme Court?
No, I think you're just wasting your time. You're not going to get anywhere, but if you want to, I mean, you don't have a lot invested into this as far as your loss is concerned, with the exception of your time, right?
Well, my expenses, in defending it, and my time and effort, of course, I didn't charge for that.
Well,
I did ask for my expenses.
It's going to cost you even more to open up another case in order to do a lawsuit to go after them, because that's the only way I can think that you can do it. I don't see you getting it any other way, because as far as everyone's concerned, case is done.
Yeah.
They're not going to get enough. So whatever it costs in your state to go into the court, a lot of states it might be $400. Here in New York it's $310. So,
I think it's $400 here. You mentioned a while ago about. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gerard.
I didn't say anything.
Oh, you didn't? No, oh, okay.
It was Terry.
Hey, did you want to say something?
No, I just wanted to say one thing. Yeah, I just wanted to say something to her. And that is that in common law, there is no stare decisis. It's not built on case law. It's supposed to have a jury. And they're supposed to decide the law and the facts of the case. So by going to set a precedent, you're going back under them, and it'll really come back to bite you, I think.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to clarify that. You defeated them under common law.
Yeah.
If you go back into their domain, they're going to rip you apart.
Yeah, it was a big win. You made a big, you don't realize how big a win it is because you really won on the jurisdiction. And that judge got nervous because he didn't want to be liable to a lawsuit because he actually paid attention and is concerned. And he just didn't want to make that battle and lose, himself be in jeopardy.
Yeah.
So, that was the way to do it, though. That's the key way to do it, to beat all these cases, really, is going through jurisdictional challenge.
I came on here when I first started this case, and you recommended I take it to federal court, and I prepared my brief to file it in federal court using all your samples as go-bys, and they never would answer the phone.
The first order of business is to challenge a jurisdiction within the court that you're there. That's the first place to challenge it. And once you do that, and if they deny it, and they don't have jurisdiction, of course they don't anyway, then that's when you would move it into federal court for cause. And the cause would be a denial of due process because they don't have jurisdiction.
Yeah, you mentioned all of that, and that's what I filed a brief to go in on violation of my constitutional and Bill of Rights for a jury and violation of due process and equal protection. But when the federal court wouldn't answer the phone, and so I drove down to Birmingham, went to the court itself, and spoke to the clerk, had my paperwork ready to file, and she said that I could file the case, but that would not turn over the trial court's decision ruling in favor of the plaintiffs, and they would still win the money judgment against me, and then they would go against my house for that. So I backtracked. Instead of filing that with the federal court, went ahead and went through with the appeals process through this
You won the case, but if you went into court, okay, challenging the jurisdiction and denial of due process, you never want to go after the agency or the court. You want to go after the individuals who stepped outside of their authority and no longer have the protection of the law, and you sue them in the federal court, and that's how you win. But if you try to sue the court directly that has already made a decision, yeah, that's problematic. Although there's an appellate process to go through and then move it into federal court to go through the appeal process there too. So I don't know why they didn't advise you of that or give you that information. But anyway, you won the case and you did it good. And that is definitely a way to go, is to try to go stay within that system to go up the line if you can. But on the other hand, none of those courts have jurisdiction anyway. I mean,
yeah.
Even the federal courts, because they moved civil law back in 1938, once they did that and they claimed to have abrogated the common law, so they say, of course, it's not possible, all the courts are de facto.
Yeah. Well, another thing is, now that I'm in this position where they dismissed the case against me, I sort of wanted to go against the judge and for his bond. I think he's a bad judge. I'd like to get my compensation through his bond and also have him removed from the bench. So there are two counties adjacent to my county in Cherokee County, and that is DeKalb County and Etowah County, two adjacent counties. And I called and left a message with the person named as the contact for those counties for the Committee of Safety, and I never got a return call from either of them. I asked that maybe we could put our heads together and decide what needs to be done next. So
most people don't have knowledge of the law. We really do strongly suggest that when people build their committees of safety, that hopefully they find somebody that's interested in sitting on the judiciary committee. And anybody who's sitting on that committee should be going through the law courses because they need to understand law. But if you don't have anybody, and all our committees of safety are young, a lot of them are just trying to get off the ground. And then, you know, people volunteer for things and then they don't do things. So that happens too. We have no control over that. But we try to communicate with the people in these committees of safety. But again, I don't really have the time for that. And we just don't have enough volunteers to really do what has to. That's why we talk all the time about trying to go professional. NLA has got to go professional. At some point in time, which means instead of volunteers, we have paid people. Because if a person's volunteering, you know, you can only require so much of them. But if they're being paid, you can require a whole lot more because they're not going to get a paycheck if they're not going to do their job. And that's why we, you know, NLA at some point, hopefully, will get enough funding to be able to turn professional.
So you would not suggest going against the judge's bond?
Yeah, Sheila, if I were in your committee of safety, I would suggest you not go for the bonds at all. I would say you should consider it a victory, and then you could also use it as a teaching. You could use this as a lesson. You could write it all out, and then you could go later. Should we get to the other side and get courts of record, you can then take care of these things. But I would stay away from the bonds. You can get in a lot of trouble that way. You've already won. So use it as a teaching lesson and do your due diligence. Sounds like you already have. Just keep it all together, and then you can act on it later once we have just courts, should we ever get there.
Okay.
Well, I agree with that, too. And bear in mind, also, the judge finally did do the right thing. So going after the bond, they're going to say why, you know. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. We can hear you now.
Oh, okay. I've been trying to talk for a while. I think that because that judge overstepped his bounds and clearly had no jurisdiction. Look, they gotta all be talking in these courts that Trump's given the courts back to the people, and it's going to be constitutional. They probably already know that. I think he got scared, and so he backed off because he knew that he couldn't defend what he did there as far as jurisdiction goes, and they know that that's where we're going to get them. We're going to get them in the federal court on these fundamental principles, and he might have been educated enough to actually fear you because, you know, look, at any of those cases that they did can come back and bite them at any time. If they start, and I think they will start going through these courts and seeing what they did wrong and reversing this stuff, they have to. They have no choice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the people have to move that through the process, but you're right. Look, at what we're looking to do is starting on the federal level is to remove every single federal judge up there in the federal judiciary, every one of them across the entire United States. Now, some people might think, well, that's way too big to do. Or some people might think, well, oh, that's not possible. Well, that's because of what you've been taught. You've been living in that fiction too long, and even though you recognize and you're living in that fiction and you're starting to see certain things, some things are way too big if you don't really understand and think them out. But the bottom line is this. The original 13th Amendment is the answer and the solution to all of this to begin with, number one. Number two, the fact that these judges have been practicing civil law and closing the doors of justice, that in itself is a big problem for them because it's subversion is what it is. So again, all these judges, once we get courts of record open back up, and that's what we're driving for, that's what we're planning for, that's what we're doing, that's what we've been planning for since 2015, since we've been filing papers in the court, to get to the end game. You know, we never really thought we'd have much success. We hoped we'd have some successes. We have a little bit of success in some cases we've helped people with. But bottom line is we've lost hundreds of cases. But you know, again, we were building evidence. We have shown from the evidence and their court decisions on all the cases that we have filed on behalf of many, many people, we're showing that there is a consistency between all the judges, and that's a conspiracy. Whatever they did in a federal court out in California is the same thing they did in New Jersey or Connecticut or New York or Texas or any place else. That shows conspiracy, number one. Number two, there is a law, okay, and it's a criminal offense written up for them. It's a criminal offense against them. For anybody who goes out to teach, put out any documentation, anything in that from that standpoint, that you're out there preaching it and saying things that are going up against the Constitution, okay, that's a crime for them. And right there is their big problem. So once a court of record, and again, our final paper is going to apply this. And we pretty much have that final paper written already, but we have at least 3-4 more cases we have to put in before we put that final one in. But the final one is done at the end of the game, at the end of time, when finally we're at a place where we can get a court of record open. And once we can get a court of record open, that's it. The law requires what we're looking for. They must leave, number one. They lose their citizenship. Well, actually, I would presume they're going to have the opportunity to leave the bar. And if they refuse, then they lose their citizenship. But the bar is guilty of treason. You see, that's also part of our case. They're teaching things that the common law has been abrogated, that the civil law is the law of the land, which is Babylonian law. That's what they're teaching. And they're destroying lots and lots of people. How many people have gone to jail when they really haven't committed a crime? How many people lost their homes and a living, or their family's been broken up, children taken? I mean, the list goes on and on and on. These people, they have to, and look, they know. When we write a paper, you got to believe at least they're looking and reading it. Maybe they don't read it, I don't know. But they know when they look at the papers, there's no defense. They have no defense. But, you know, again, these people are true believers. But there's no, don't waste your time going after them. It's not worth it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your advice.
All right. Okay, thank you. We'll take our next caller. Let's see. It looks like Richard again, right?
No, hi there, can you hear me?
What am I saying? Ricardo. That's what it is. Ricardo. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, what state you're from again? Yep, I can hear you.
Okay, good. I just have I had mentioned this a couple of months ago about landlord lease that was committing fraud. I mean, garages, but that's fraud. Well, we're getting down to the end, we're gonna move out, and we finally think we're gonna be able to get this mortgage put together this week, but now, on the lease it gives, I just want to know, as I understand contract law and lease law, it's agreement between two parties to perform. And right. If either party violates parts of the lease, the other one can enforce it, or one cannot enforce it. It kind of nullifies the lease. True? Mm-hmm. False?
Well, yeah, if you have a contract with someone, yeah.
Okay. Well, here's what's going on.
But there are some contracts that are unlawful. I know when I first got into construction, and I remember talking to a lawyer, and they had to mention certain things that, well, in New York, that's against the law. They can't write the contract with that kind of a, you know, whatever it is that they've written up in it. It's a long time ago. I don't remember the details. But generally speaking, some things are against the law to use. Now, there's no meeting of the mind. That also, you can make a case, even though you ignorantly just signed the contract. But if there was no meeting of the minds, there has to be. But again, they're expecting you to be a meeting of the mind in the sense that they give you the paper, you look at that, you read through it, and you say, "Oh, wait a second, I don't agree with this, I don't agree with that." The problem with that, though, often is, and depending on what you're trying to do, they may not just deal with you and move on. And if you really want to, you know, deal with them, then you end up signing. But meeting of the mind is a key thing. You might be able to make that point, even though
And I made it a point too. We're going on the fifth year of being there. So in the lease, it says that if I do not renew the lease, so I automatically go over to a month-to-month lease, and then I'll have to pay the market rate plus $100. And down below, it says some other verbiage in there, but same thing. If you go month-to-month, the lease goes to market rate. Well, the market rate was stated up in the first paragraph of the deal, but I'm going to use the actual example number. It said that the market rate was $1,900, and then last year, when we renewed the lease, he was given a market discount of $150, so then it'd be $1,750. But we've had this issue with the water thing, the fraudulent thing. The lease also states that the landlord is responsible. But what I'm trying to get at, when the landlord breaks their terms and conditions, it's not just one thing. There's six different things that they've been violating all along. Now we get down to the end. It says that if you go to month-to-month lease, you got to pay the market rate. And I know that she's going to be a problem. So I made a copy of the lease in my last check. I circled the $1,900 mark and I drew a line all the way down to the bottom where it says market rate plus $100. And so I paid $200. Well, and if there's any, by either party, termination lease, it has to be 60 days in advance of the termination. And if I move out or whatever, then I'm going to be responsible for that 60 days no matter what. But here's the thing what happened. This is a real kicker. I mean, this whole thing, I've been keeping track of our water bill. We've been paying double and triple the amounts of water that the other units in that complex have not been paying as much as we have. And all four of us were four townhomes connected together with the common wall. And A, I'm in C. A, and it specifically says in the lease, I'm responsible for the water, sewer, garbage, electricity in my unit. While she's been... They've got a broken water main. I had the city maintenance guy come over and he shut our water off one day and said, "You got a broken water main." And I asked before or after the meter. It's only one meter. She never disclosed that either. She said, "Oh, I'll put everything in your name," but she never did. So there was just going on and on and on. So I thought, well, okay. I went in the North Dakota Century Code and looked it up. But what I want to get at is that she's violated so many things in that lease. Now we get down to the end. Now she says she's only going to give us 30 days to vacate. And that they can show the apartment to anybody they want, anytime, with notice and all that kind of stuff. And we're in the process of moving out anyway. But now she's threatening. I paid the $1,900 plus $100. I paid $2,000. And I've been writing on every check separately the utilities bill and the rent bill, the amount. And I've been keeping track of that whole thing for the last three, four years. And so now she gets down to the thing where she's demanding that I pay the market rate, the new market rate. And I said, I didn't sign that lease. I purposely didn't, because you're going to raise the rent $400 a month. And I said, I'm not paying it. And so I'm going to revert back. And the lease does say it reverts back to the market rate. But she doesn't say the market rate at the time of the automatic renewal. She doesn't have that in there. So she thinks she can go out and she said, or to prevent other notices. That's a threat. That's her way of saying that I'm going to evict you. And she uses threats and misrepresentation. But what I want to know is, what can I do to, like, is there something in the book, on NLA books or anything, about when leases are broken, that it stops any action that they want to take, like such as a notice and demand or a cease and desist, call her out on these fraud and all this kind of stuff to do it, or do I have to just kind of, we're only a couple ways away from moving on.
It sounds like you could win this case in court. Bear in mind, when you're making an argument, between two individuals, you and the other people, whoever that might be, and then you're not going up against the status quo. In other words, you're not going up against the government itself. You're not going up against big corporations, okay? But it's just between two people bickering out between a problem. It sounds like you could win that case if you couch it right and put it into the court and make your positions. The other thing is you're leaving the place, right?
We're leaving it, yes.
Yeah, when are you leaving? This month, next month, when?
This month, end of this month, hopefully next week.
I would ignore it and move on, and if they try to take you to court, which is doubtful,
yeah, and
they did. Just hold on. For them to take you into court, there's a couple of things. Number one, they are a business, okay? So they're a corporation. They can't defend themselves. they have to hire a lawyer. No lawyer is going to go and defend a corporation with at least $1,500 down, bare minimum. Okay, and that's just the beginning of the thing. It's going to cost them quite a few thousand, $5,000-$6,000 just to take you to court, and that's just paying the legal fees. Plus, they got to pay to get into the court. You on your side of the thing, if you're taking care of your own business, and they did do something like that, you can file a counterclaim, okay, and go after them. And the counterclaim is done within that the same index number, so you don't have to get another court number or a case number or an index number, whatever they call it in your state. You don't have to do that. So it's not going to really cost you anything but your time to fake that battle. And I think you can make a good position, and I think they would lose because, again, there's no reason, unless it's the judge is their cousin or something, or whatever the case may be, you know, some kind of relationship, the fix is in, that kind of thing. As long as that's not the case, which in most cases it shouldn't be or isn't. Although I had a case where I lost and I should have won, and then I found out later that the person who I was suing was an accountant, and was, it turns out that that accountant had a relationship, business relationship with that judge. And so I guess their judge had business was going on, and of course, you know, I was ignorant back in those days, didn't have the time or the knowledge to fight, didn't want to go hire a lawyer and do that again, and so it just didn't, you know, I didn't bother with it. But the point is, I think you'd win in the court, and I don't think they're going to want to throw that much money. I mean, if they were trying to go after you, how much money are they going to win off you? A couple $100, $500, or what are they going to win?
Well, I want to go after her for, she owes me probably $2,000-$3,000.
So then you could do that.
I was fixing a lot of things. I was just, but that's what I'm thinking is if she does, here's my biggest concern is she's going to try to use that 3-day eviction notice for not paying the rent.
No. It's a 3-day notice or a 30. Here in New York, it's a 30-day notice, and that's required to be filed before they even go into the court. So if you didn't pay your rent or anything, they have to send you a notice with a 3-day notice or so many day notice. And then if you still don't pay it, then or whatever the case may be at that. But if you still don't pay it, do anything, then they file you a 30 dispossess, and you have 30 days to vacate. And this is New York anyway. So when you don't vacate, then at that point they can file it in the court and go through the process of having you evicted, and will eventually evict you. I cannot believe that they're going to skip due process. So whatever they're saying or whatever they're doing, it's just a normal process that people usually volunteer with, mostly because they're ignorant. They don't know, well, I got to leave, I'm being dispossessed. Well, unless the sheriff's knocking on your door and serving you with a 3-day notice to leave, because, again, that's the law here in New York, is 3-day notice from the sheriff. But the sheriff can give you 7 days or more. Okay. So if there is something that the sheriff feels, something. They can give you more time, but generally it's a 3-day thing. But no, you cannot be thrown out without going, getting due process. A court has to rule on their behalf and against you, and then has to file the papers over for execution with the sheriff, and then the sheriff has to come out and file and serve you, and you get your last 3 days then.
Okay, so now
fine, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, here's the thing. She said she's only going to give us 30 days to go out, and at least that's 60 days. So I can say, yes, you're up yours. I'm staying here for another 60 days.
There you go.
And then go at the end of that time. But if for some reason this mortgage closing doesn't take place during this month, it should be, but with the judge, we've talked about that before, but I just said, you know, I'm just going to pay the doggone judgment and just move on. And they violated so many of the fair housing things, and so much stuff that's gone in. So I thought, well, I'm just going to wait. And in the Fair Credit Collections Act, they violated that. And it's an expired statute of limitation. Like you said earlier, good luck getting a lawyer to go against the status quo.
No, it's not that the lawyer, it's the judge that's not going to go against the status quo. Okay.
Well, I can't even get the lawyer to see my position. I said, I want a lawyer that's going to work for me, not the system. I want to work for, and I said that. And they, it's just whatever. And so, but my main thing is that the lease does say either party, tenant or lease or leasee, have to give a 60-day notice when it goes to.
I wouldn't worry about anything then, because if they did try to pull you into court during the time period, then that's what you would produce to the judge, 60-day notice.
Okay.
And it can't go nowhere, you know, it not until that 60 days is up, okay?
Well, there were some people here that, in this complex, that...
But you will have to pay. But you'll have to pay. Well, that's because they were ignorant.
But they didn't go to court on that, you know, that summons that they got for the...
Because they
didn't go to court.
Because they believed what they were saying was true, and they had to leave. That's the problem, okay? Look,
yeah.
I tried to help my niece with a situation like this with a foreclosure, and she was all concerned. I got to leave. I got to know. Don't worry about it. You could be here for years. It was a mortgage foreclosure, by the way. You could be here for many years before, but you know she got frightened and left anyway, and you know that was that. But she could have been there another 4 or 5 years. Who knows how many years living rent free. Through that process.
Well, that one you were talking to earlier tonight, I have a friend, he stayed in his house for 6 years under the bankruptcy.
Yeah,
they didn't
yeah.
kick him out because they didn't want to have the house sitting empty.
Well, no, it's not the reason why. You look at if they could push it for an abandonment, they can change everything and all the things behind the scene within 2 years, okay? But they need to, A, not have someone coming into the court complaining in a court that really doesn't exist, that the whole thing is a fraud, and they got to be careful how they operate, and the judge can't make a decision, okay?
Okay.
That's the problem. Well,
they
keep going, trying to wear you out over and over and over again.
And they finally just moved out on their own, but they were there for 5 years rent-free.
The only
thing he paid was electricity.
Oh, yeah.
So, but anyway, okay, here's the thing. Can I... If she starts getting nasty, just ignore it, or what would you recommend for a response back to her?
Well, I would serve her with a notice and demand type thing on being obedient to the contract. And I would certify, you know, I would do it in an affidavit form. You can get that information right up here under education starts here. Let me see if I can get to it. Hang on.
Yep, I've got that form. I printed that out. You know, the copy.
Doing a notice and demand?
Yeah.
Example. Okay. So we put notice and demand concerning the fact that they're breaking the agreement on the lease, that you have 60 days, that was the agreement, so on and so forth. And if they pursue things further, you're going to seek damages for whatever you're damaged by and the time and legal expenses, blah, 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 blah. You know, you just write it up the way it lays it out. There are, I believe, 8 points that have to be made. If you don't want to miss one, you got to get all 8. You want to do it in affidavit form. You want to serve it to them through certified mail. And the best way to do it is like in New York, and they don't really hold, you know, they'll use this sometimes, and sometimes they don't, I don't know. But in New York, for instance, they got this silly rule or idea that... you know, when you send your certified mail, you also have to send a mail, regular mail. So you send one regular mail, and you send it again, certified mail. And then you do a sworn affidavit of service that's the way it was done. But with you, that doesn't even apply because you just have to send them a notice of demand and certify the sending of that paper. And that should slow them down. They'll have to go get a lawyer to understand it, and it's going to cost them money for that. And then the lawyer, you know, may try to move things quicker, but who knows where that's going to go. There's all kinds of things, but I wouldn't worry.
Is there
about
ever opportunities to get in front of the judge before anything goes down to talk to them, or no?
Well, they can't do nothing without a court order.
Yeah.
So you can't.
Like for myself to sign out. You know, how would the judge feel about something that's going like this? We do have a common law judge here. I've been mentioned this before. My wife just got through her citizenship oath here a couple weeks ago, and the judge that was there was talking about, you know, you got to get involved in your country. You got to get involved. You got to understand the law. And he campaigned on being a judge of rule of law, not of opinions. That's
mm-hmm.
how he campaigned. And it was this guy that did this thing. I was going to try to find out what it was. Well, here he shows up. He was the main judge talking to the audience, like 80 people, four times that day. And four times 80 people that were getting sworn in as citizens. And but he gave an excellent speech, and I was just mad at myself for not recording it, so I got the tail end of it, but I didn't record all of his talk. He had to go because they were doing some trial jury selections and stuff, so he had to go. But he just said, "Welcome to America, and get involved in your country." And he stressed that very much. He said, "Vote, get out there and exercise your right to vote, and understand your laws." And so he was kind of hinting at some things. I thought, "Wow, never heard any judge ever say something like that."
Yeah, well, that
kind of led me to believe that we got one guy. So if I did go to court, I don't want to request. I don't know if you can request a certain judge.
It's got to be by, you know, they have the wheel, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Anyway, we got to move on.
That's it. I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Let's see. It's looks like Fred. It's 980 area code. You got the mic. You've been unmuted. Is your name Fred, and what's your state?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. What's your first name and your state?
Oh, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay, and your name is Fred, I presume, right?
Yes, I am Fred. Fred Curtis.
Go right ahead, Fred.
Here's my situation, and it boils down to the one thing that you've been talking about. How do we get into a court of record? In my case, I was harassed by animal control for a flock of chickens, and I assured them that I was not under their jurisdiction, and I rescinded all of the citations they sent me. Well, their citations are completely lacking in due process. They just say, our guy came out and he has probable cause to believe that your rooster was causing a nuisance. Here's your citation. Please send $50 to this address. And I would rescission those and rescission them. And that's been going on since last September up until April.
Send a challenge to the jurisdiction. And first of all, look at I guess, what is it, the town giving it to you? I mean, obviously a code enforcer came out and gave it to you. But, I mean, is the town trying to enforce it without going to court?
Yes.
Yeah, well, then just ignore it. Without a court order, you can't do nothing anyway.
Well, it's worse than that. So then I contact the city attorney and the city police attorney by letter, advising them that I am a U.S. national and I'm not under their jurisdiction.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything to them. You shouldn't go from that point, because being a U.S. national doesn't give you anything special. You're just one of the people, and that's what the position you want to come from. And then you want to use the common law and use the codes you can against them, okay? So you were pulled into court?
Yes. The only city personnel that would answer me was a guy in internal affairs in the police department. And I advised him of what was going on and that, you know, they were about to seize my property without due process, and that the city was being set up for a big lawsuit. And he assured me he'd do what he could. So that was on Friday. And on Monday, I get a visit from a patrol officer with also the animal control in tow, and they write me out a patrol officer citation, but for the same municipal code violation, 3-69, municipal code. Okay, so that citation has a court appearance in it. So I attend the first one, and I find out that the whole purpose of that is to intimidate people into obtaining legal counsel. So I explained to them that I don't need any enemy camels under my tent, and I will be representing myself in...
What court? Town court?
It's a district court. 26 Judicial District, Mecklenburg County. So anyway, then that... From that, they set a trial court hearing for July the 5th. So I go to the trial court hearing, and when my case is called, judge wants me to get up on the witness stand.
Well, hold on. Look, they're filing statutory charge, correct?
Yes.
Obviously. Okay.
Obviously. So, yeah. The judge tells me that
means it's not a court of record. They're according to statutes. So the process to deal with them is challenging jurisdiction.
Well, I'm trying to get to that. The first thing I said when I got on the witness stand is exactly these words. I am Fred Gerdes, a living man, child of God, one of we the people, and thus sovereign, and I am hereby special divine appearance.
All that makes them think you're crazy. Okay, I'm not saying that anything you're saying is wrong, but it's just not the way to do it. You just go into the court and you file challenge of jurisdiction. You know, we've got instructions on that under the traffic court here on the law, and you want to come in with an appearance ticket, which is coming in by special appearance, which means you're not agreeing to any of their terms, okay? And you want to file a notice of motion, and that notice of motion is to really deliver a verified jurisdictional challenge, so you want to do that. And then when they don't answer you because the other side won't answer, then you file a default. And you go to the clerk and you file your default and you get your papers and you file it back into the court and you're done. Now, if they do try to make a decision, a lot of judges like to say, well, I got jurisdiction. Well, the bottom line is that they didn't. Whoever's on the other side, a prosecutor or whatever,
county DA.
Okay, well, they have to file a paper rebutting your jurisdictional challenge. And if they don't do that, the judge can't rule for them. They got to rule for the papers that are at hand in front of them. So at that point, it's a denial of due process. Now you can sue the judge and everyone else involved, including the prosecutor, and you can then move it into federal court for cause, there's other ways to do it. But I would go at that point to federal court for cause because they got... It's a due process problem, and they got jurisdiction over the due process. And the only rulings that they can make ultimately is on that jurisdictional challenge, not on the issue at hand, just the jurisdictional challenge. And in your wherefore clause, you can look for restitution, what you want for restitution, and you want the court to cease and desist and shut down. And that's that. Now, again, that's another court. It's another battle. Also, the federal courts, even though you're using them, all the other courts, bear in mind, they also are under civil law. But you could, possibly speaking, but again, the courts are a mess.
Well, okay, there's more. So I make this statement, and I challenge the jurisdiction, the very first thing out of my mouth. I'm here by special appearance, and I'm challenging the jurisdiction of this court. That's exactly what I said. So the judge goes, oh, well, you know, this is a statutory court, and these are state laws, and
hey,
they support
this. Whoa. Look, what you just said is what you need to do, but you need to do it with proof of the fact that they don't have jurisdiction. You have to lay out that they don't have personam jurisdiction, and they have to prove that they have personam jurisdiction, and you have to show them why they don't have personam jurisdiction, because they're a court of statutes and not a court of law. And that's your point in your paper that has to be argued, and that's the argument. Okay.
Wait. I'm supposed to file this paper before the court appearance?
Well, the moment I get any kind of a code infraction or some kind of thing, you know, I immediately file my papers. Yes, within days I file my papers.
Okay. Well, I sent a letter to the clerk of court.
Doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
I know it's frustrating.
Yeah, it is, because
that's why due process, even the due process they use, okay, the series, the way things are supposed to work in the courtroom is the way it should work in a court of law also, okay? There is due process, all right? You write a paper, they've got to respond to it. Judge can only rule on what's before the court. An affidavit unrebutted rules the court, you win, end of subject. Judge, you can't make any decisions for that side because they didn't respond. Doesn't matter that there's a prosecutor. You're challenging jurisdiction. Someone
okay.
has to stand
okay.
up.
Wait. I have numerous affidavits that I have filed with the court, the clerk of court, the Secretary of State of North Carolina. I have any number of affidavits that I sent to the animal control officer, advising him that he has no jurisdiction over me. And none of those are rebutted. And well, I had all of those in my hand.
Well, the jurisdiction you have to challenge is the jurisdiction of the court, not of the individual.
No. I challenged the jurisdiction of the court. The very first thing I said, I challenged the jurisdiction of this court. And I had with me all of these unrebutted affidavits, which the judge refused to look at.
All right, listen, people lose, and I didn't understand this till recently, people lose all the time to not having standing. Standing is just really laying out how you have standing. You have to show that you can possibly be injured or you have been injured, or if things continue under the situation that's at hand, you will eventually be injured, okay? So the point is you have to make the case. When you go into court and you challenge jurisdiction, the other side can say, well, we got jurisdiction. Case over, judge rules for that side, moves on because he believes you got jurisdiction. You write a paper laying out how it is they don't have jurisdiction, okay? Now the other side must respond and rebut to every issue. If they miss one issue and that issue is powerful enough to make the point that they don't have jurisdiction, case over, you win, judge must rule for you. Not that they're going to rule for you, because they're morons too. They're not that bright. And number one, number two, they believe they've got jurisdiction. And number three, they don't want to let you go. Judge, when a court tries to get jurisdiction over you, they don't want to let you go. Okay, this is just like a pit bull. It's just what it is. And so, but the thing is that's when you move it to a higher court for that purpose, because they're denying you due process. Okay, they did not give you the due process.
Right.
Once jurisdiction is followed, it must be proven. But you have to lay that out. If you don't lay it out, it means nothing. Speaking the words are irrelevant. You have to do everything in an affidavit, and you have to lay it out.
But how would I file those affidavits with the court?
Right here. Go to Education Starts Here. Okay. Come down to Law. Then go over to Court Forms and Process. Then move down to Instructions and Forms for Traffic Court. I would use that one. I see we have other instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction. I got to go through them because they're old, and this is the most recent because I updated this one here. But the key thing is this. When you go in here, this is for traffic court. So you have to put on your thinking cap and change everything to focus in on whatever the report is. You know, you're not going in for a traffic violation, you're going in for some other kind of code violation. It is a code violation, so that's what you have to make the point and put all the information concerning that. But the basic law of jurisdiction and the requirements of jurisdiction is clear. They don't have personam jurisdiction because they're not a court of law, they're a court of statutes. And there's Supreme Court rulings, which you'll find in here, that talks that the statutory courts are not courts of record, criminal courts are not courts of record, civil law courts are not courts of record. None of them are legal. They're not lawful, according to the common law. Now, winning the case, of course, you may have to go to the appellate. And even going through up the appeals, they just hell-bent on destroying people, I guess. I don't know what else to tell you on that.
Yes, okay. Following the judge making his drivel about statutory, and then, of course, that's territorial because I'm in the territory of the city of Charlotte.
This is going to be the last point because I'm looking at the time and we're going to close in 10 with the two other people, but go ahead, I'll finish off that last point. Go ahead.
Then he proceeds to announce that I'm being arraigned. And reads off the charge of, public nuisance, code violation 3-69. How do you plead? Well, I refuse to plead.
Boss.
Yeah, I just absolutely said, this is bullshit. Well, I didn't say that, but because there's like 9 people in the court and 4 of them are police, and one of them standing right behind me.
Your answer to that, I mean, again, not playing is the point, but a good answer to that is the fact that I've already challenged jurisdiction. Jurisdiction challenge must be decided. You don't have jurisdiction on me, and you got to prove you got it. So there is no plea to be made here. And that's how I would respond.
Yeah, I considered that, but I decided I didn't want to battle the judge in his own courtroom.
You were already battled.
Yes, well, because as soon as he finished all his little drivel, he waited about 15 or 20 seconds, and then he says, I'm assuming jurisdiction in this case.
Yeah, well, and, again, he doesn't have it, and he can't make it because he believes he has it, and he didn't rule, and, but you didn't put papers in either. If you didn't put papers in, there's nothing for him to rule on, so he can kind of get away with some of that to some degree, okay, because you have to put it on paper in writing on an affidavit form. An affidavit unrebutted rules the court. But with that, I got to move on because we only got about 8 minutes, and I got two people we need to go to. We
all
can
right.
talk about it another time if you want.
Yes, I'll do it. Thanks.
Okay, let's take our next caller here. It's Jermaine, I believe it is, from North Carolina. Mic's unmuted. You got the mic.
Yes. I just want to check and take your take or opinion on this historic Supreme Court ruling on the Chevron defense. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I heard about it, and I'm not sure exactly. I did get a little bit of information. I did download the decision, which I think is 151 pages, and I haven't had time to read through it. But what do you understand about it?
Well, it's supposedly that this puts the Fed agencies, IRS, FDIC, all that. It's going to affect, their ruling, the laws that they put on us. And supposedly,
you're falling away from the mic. Get back closer to the mic. Go ahead.
Yes. So this is going to impact those ABC agencies, IRS, FBI and all that, the rules.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And I did read a little bit about it, and it does help in certain cases where they don't have, authority to come out or do something against you or something. But again, I have not read through the case. I haven't had time to read through the case. And I'm hoping to because I've heard a lot of people bring this up already. But 151 pages, it's going to take, I got to find time to sit down and digest it. But
okay.
Again, I don't know. Maybe in the near future, you could try again and maybe I'll find time.
I'm just trying to say if this is moving us in that the right direction with your move and all that. I think it is.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I was just thinking that this is taking us in the move that you would promoting it's gonna help the whole country move forward and not be subdued by this.
Well, it does create, I understand it does create some kind of a problem with the federal government coming out after you. First of all, look, the ATF has no power or authority at all. They're a leg in the and ultimately it's an election agency, but they're an arm, shall I say, of the Federal Reserve or the IRS, shall I say, because and all of that is unlawful. That agency doesn't have any legal ability to begin with because it's not even a proper government agency. But beyond that, the Constitution doesn't give the power to the federal government for a police force to come out after people for different things. They'll try, they make things up. For instance, the ATF will try to get you if you cross a state line with a weapon and maybe even sell it to somebody, and then they try to get you for dealing arms or whatever it is that they come out after you. But even with that, they don't have the authority for that because you're not... you're not in business. You're not going from one state to another, crossing lines in order to sell weapons and things of that nature. Of course, if you were doing that, then of course you have to go and file with the federal government. You fall under certain regulations, and you know, you're doing some commercial activities. But they'll do anything they can to try to get jurisdiction over you, and they make it up. And people really are too brain dead. They don't know. They're just totally ignorant because they don't know anything about the law, that it can't be applied to them, number one. And the lawyers are just brain dead, okay? Maybe they just want to make money, that's all, but whatever. There's no reason to even make... If they make a proper argument, then that's it. But that doesn't mean that the court's going to do the right thing either. So, again, we're in troubling times. We're in really troubling times. But... It's amazing times, too. So.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Okay, we'll take our last caller here. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Ross. Ross, can you hear me? Oh, maybe you're not. Maybe you're still muted. No, I got you unmuted, I believe. Ross, you got the mic. Last call for Ross. Does anyone see if he's... I'm not getting whether he's muted or unmuted. I know I unmuted him, but he looks like he's still muted. It might be on his end. All right. Well, with that, we've come to the end of our program. It's 2 minutes to 11. So we're going to end things here. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night, everybody.